this is Breakdown is Breakthrough, the McLuhan Dooline, Volume 1, Number 10, April 1969. And we got into parts, the first few pages, and now we're continuing. Darwin's theory of the missing link is a breakdown that proved to be a very great breakthrough indeed. As long as people were looking for a totally unified universe in the 18th century style of the great chain of being, in quotes, they were trapped in a merely connected visual metaphor from which quantum mechanics releases us by its metaphor of field and resonance. The great contribution of the missing link in quotes, and yeah, the great contribution of the quote missing link, unquote, was to turn nature into a whodunit in which everybody could become a sleuth. In fact, it was at the time that Darwin was hung up on his missing link that Edgar Allan Poe invented the detective story based on the missing link in the chain of evidence. The breakdown of narrative art and storylines led to the much greater breakthrough into poetic symbolism and discontinuity. Symbolism, in brackets, i.e. throwing together by juxtaposition, bracket, is a principle of randomness which our telegraph press exploits to the full. And he has beside that on the right column, because I'm reading the middle column, and then a small quote on the right side of the middle column. As in a sound light show, which would be people call the light show or light sound show, he's calling it as in a sound hyphen light show, the reader tends to merge with the environment so created. That was the Ken Kesey acid tests. Ken Kesey and the Grateful Dead started that in San Francisco. Or there were others in New York, maybe, but those are the famous psychedelic light shows. McLuhan is seeing that the reader or the listener is tending to merge with the environment so created. Then, the instant news gathering services of the telegraph eliminate, quote, all rational order of connectiveness, unquote, in favor of mere dateline, datelines in italics. Instead of connected discourse, the electric press offers a service environment or mosaic image of the entire, in italics, society in action. Now that is what Ulysses is. Reading Ulysses, it's a portrait of the community in action, which varies from local Dublin stuff to historical environments to the global village. Society in action, a mosaic image. The editorial as an arena of viewpoints hyphenated, or a continuous statement is a kind of dramatic soliloquy. The editorial as an arena of viewpoint or continuous statement is a kind of dramatic soliloquy. If you remember, the word soliloquy was used a lot in one of James Joyce's charts for his book Ulysses that I've done some rehearsal on, my great memory. So then we go to the next page, which is a repeat of what I just read, but it has different quotes on the side, on the right-hand side. So where it had said in the middle column, the great contribution of the, quote, missing link, unquote, was to turn nature into whodunit. Look at that. Turn nature into a whodunit in which everybody could become a sleuth. There's your beginning of electric participation. In fact, it was at the time, and that leads to existentialism, too. In fact, it was at the time that Darwin was hung up on his missing link that Edgar Allan Poe invented the detective story based on the missing link in the chain of evidence. And it says beside it, doubt, D-O-U-B-T, colon, seeing double. Doubt, he says, means seeing double. Then the next paragraph. The breakdown of narrative art and storylines led to the much greater breakthrough into poetic symbolism and discontinuity. Symbolism, i.e. throwing together by juxtaposition, is a principle of randomness which our telegraph press exploits to the full. And as beside that, the new flood of print, in brackets Gutenberg, with a small g, not a usual capital G, the new flood of print, in brackets Gutenberg, produced the need for, quote, organized ignorance. See? Organized ignorance. Nobody knew what they were doing when they were writing down stuff, but it was just organized ignorance, Carol. For example, Nicholas of Cusa developed the technique of doubt via, quote, learned ignorance, unquote. For example, Nicholas of Cusa, he's about 1440, developed the technique of doubt via learned ignorance. Nicholas of Cusa is a major hero of LaRouche, he was instrumental in bringing the Greek scholars over to start the Renaissance in Florence. So that was pretty neat, pretty good patterns. I'll reread that again. The new flood of print, in brackets Gutenberg, produced the need for organized ignorance. For example, Nicholas of Cusa developed the technique of doubt via, learned ignorance. Organizing ignorance for discovery, as McLuhan says, organizing ignorance for discovery. And your results will be learned ignorance. And doubt means seeing double. So the next page, Canada's Prime Minister Trudeau, and he would have just become Prime Minister a year before, well, 8 months before, something like that. And what's that? Didn't I mute everything? What is that? Maybe it's just my own stuff. Yeah. Canada's Prime Minister Trudeau is a perpetual annoyance to the various newspaper men because of his continuous effort to understand processes and his avoidance of points of view or declarations of policy. Policies and goals are fragmented features of the old mechanical world of 19th century product orientation. And to the left of that is a small quote. They disappear now in education as much as in politics. That means policies and goals. They disappear now in education as much in politics, and later we will see it disappeared in business and in Wall Street. No more policies and goals. Next paragraph. Today, all possibility... Oh, wait a minute. Since I read that, if I go to the next page, which is a repeat, I'll have to see if there's any quote up in the upper left there. No, there isn't. Next paragraph. Today, all possibility of understanding stems from breakdown of existing processes. In his, and then he gives a book title, The Age of Discontinuity, Peter Drucker points out, page 59 in brackets, that, quote, the greatest obstacle to economic growth in the United States and Great Britain is the craft organization of work, and especially the craft union, which puts a tremendous premium on doing things the way they used to be done, unquote. And he has on the right, McLuhan has a little statement. Most people prefer to express private anguish or moral indignation to understanding anything. In the third paragraph, as committees break down as a means of decision-making in all bureaucracies, a new breakthrough occurs. The old are... Oh, that's right. That's why there's noise. That's Roxy's in here on the phone. Right, Roxy? That's what it is. But you're not making noise.
Right? Oh, sorry.
That's what the hell's breathing in my ear? Okay. That's all right. Right. The old, okay, as committees break down, now McLuhan said in the 60s that government was taken over by committee. And so as committees break down as a means of decision-making in all bureaucracies, a new breakthrough occurs. The old observation was, quote, a camel is a horse designed by a committee, unquote. So committees would come up with a horse, but it would look like a camel. So committees were a bit of a disservice. So he's happy they're breaking down. Now, he told the student revolutionaries in 68, 69 that you guys will just end up on committees. He was saying your desire to take over the state and bureaucratic apparatus, the university apparatus, will just put you on stupid committees. So that was probably the best statement those kids were told. Today we can say that the future of the university is to transform the committee into the education system itself. Abandon the camel. Remember, the camel is a horse designed by a committee. Now, as students insist upon a say in the decision-making process, it becomes quite simple to transfer all of them to such committees and to relieve them of all classroom and course activity. Ensconced in committees for 8 hours a day, they would quickly discover the actual ways of their society and yearn for the leisure and autonomy of classes and courses. Compared to the uninterrupted hours of committee work, the diversity and brevity of classes in a huge environment of bull sessioning is pure utopia. Roxy, do you remember me? Did I give out that idea months ago? Did he mention that in an early due line, the giving the students to let them take over? And they'd be gone in a year. Do you remember that? Maybe not.
No.
Okay, so what has he got here?
But okay. I really like this idea of the organized ignorance, because it's really everything we think we know is constantly being erased. So
yes.
We really don't know anything. History is always being changed. Science is always being changed. But we attempt to organize this ignorance. We are...
The mind keeps putting a pattern to it. Finding a pattern.
Yes, so that's why I'm so happy that this loop of organizing ignorance is finally going to an end.
Yes, and in the William Irwin Thompson book, Imaginary Landscape, 1989, he goes through five phases of evolution, cultural evolution, and he says the victim in the electric age is the mind. The mind is the victim. So more and more people through the 20th century realized that at least the left hemisphere, part of the brain, wasn't going to function too well, but maybe both rights and lefts hemispheres were a victim. So that Thompson shows he understands the effect of electricity, as McLuhan was pointing out, one of the major effects, by showing that the victim in our time, planetization, he called it, is the mind. That's important.
It's because I think we're not really interested in knowing, but in distracting ourselves.
In abstracting? Is that what you said? Abstract?
No, distracting.
In distracting, right. Distracting from the distraction. There's the astral body and chemical body distraction, and that's menacing now. So we want to be distracted from the chemical body distraction with our chip body and TV body distraction. The battle of distractions. And that's because people feel guilty for being distracted, and they shouldn't.
Yes, and for a long time, the book was the main...
The glue that held together the distraction.
Yes, the way to archive or organize ignorance.
Yes, the book was the learned, was organized ignorance. They couldn't organize ignorance before the book, unless you just beat up people. But
and then the universities ended up being just a committee.
Yes, end up being a committee.
They try to teach this organized ignorance. And, yeah, look.
Okay, well, in what I read on the left, it says, as committee, in the middle it says, as committees break down as a means of decision-making in all bureaucracies, a new breakthrough occurs. The old observation was, quote, a camel is a horse designed by a committee. Today we can see that the future of the university is to transform the committee into the education system itself. Abandon the camel. As students insist upon a say in the decision-making process, it becomes quite simple to transfer all of them to such committees and to relieve them of all classroom and course activity. Ensconced in committees for 8 hours a day, they would quickly discover the actual ways of their society and yearn for the leisure and autonomy of classes and courses. Compared to the uninterrupted hours of committee work, the diversity and brevity of classes in a huge environment of bullshitting or bull-sessioning is pure utopia. Now, he has, to the left of the committee talk, he says, it's a quote from Peter Drucker, quote, there's no reason to believe that the diploma certifies too much more than that the holder has sat a long time, unquote.
Yes, it's just domestication. It's programming to
tolerate sitting.
To be able to function in the system as something they need, or they want you to do.
Right,
and you pay for that.
Yeah, the latest, episode 5 of Ray Donovan, I'm catching up with my Ray Donovan, started a month or so ago. And his female assistant, you know, a thug, you know, implements power. She got fired by Ray for a little while, and she had to go work in some other place. So later he wants her back, and she says, I'm sick of sitting at a desk all day. What she wants to do is get out, walk around, and trip people, punch people, be kinetic. And it's just anathema or a curse to her to have to sit in some place all day long. She's too restless physically. But that's what a lot of people today are inflicted by, the endless sitting. Drucker says, there's no reason to believe that the diploma certifies too much more than that the holder has sat a long time, unquote. Then McLuhan says, the breakdown of sitting for exams reveals the cause and pathos of student sit-ins. That's what they call the sort of semi-revolutions of the 60s. The students wanted to have a sit-in. Sit-ins won't bear examination. The ultimate goal for sit-ins is the chair of some large university. They want to be able to get into the president's office and sit in the chair, which they did at various universities in 68. The radical students sitting in the president's chair. So, let's see if there's another.
Another thing I see very interesting is how, for example, he says Edgar Allan Poe made criminal novel because of this idea of the missing link.
Yes.
And now these sit-ins of the students as a protest of sitting in
sitting in.
But what I see is it's very interesting how things reflect in the society like a mirror, but they have an effect. They're like the missing link or their sitting is a reflection of something that seems, I mean, somebody else will not see the relationship or the...
Right, because the image is flipped.
Being the effect of the other.
When you look in a mirror, the image is reversed, or an aspect of it is reversed. So, yeah, people miss the retrieving of the rearview mirror and how it alters the situation. Because it's altered, they didn't know what was retrieved. They didn't know the automobile was the knight in shining armor retrieved. Retrieval of the knight in shining armor, which is a nice pun.
Yes. This is what Dion calls the looking back to see, the rearview mirror.
Yes, the repenting.
That you can do, and McLuhan could do, you can see this relationships between things that seem to have no relation.
Yes.
The fact that
Darwin discovers a missing link, and you called it the criminal novel. The phrase is the detective story. Edgar Allan Poe invented the detective story based on the missing link in the chain of evidence. Two uses of the gap, which was coming in with the electric effect of the telegraph. And it made everybody be a participant. So it turned nature into a whodunit in which everybody could become a sleuth. That's pretty good. Everybody had, you know, a new theory about what was going on in connecting nature. Because they required connection.
I think maybe that's the main thing you learn from McLuhan. To
swallow up particular details, and they fit a nice, a larger pattern made by the iron filings. You know, you can take a magnet, put the iron filings on a glass table, and then move the filings around with the magnet underneath the filings. So modern society is constantly making patterns out of the iron filings of data.
Yes, and that is what I saw when you were explaining the Babylonian objects in the museum.
Right.
You were connecting to things that, I will never have made those connections.
Right.
That's the amazing thing.
Well, I was so well trained.
Your explanations.
Right, I was so well trained. I could walk into any environment and see in a pattern and fit it back into McLuhanism so that it's an ongoing dialogue, consistent dialogue for years. It was on for years what I did. So we did. Some of these lines are pretty good, but I'm not going to repeat them. We're going to go on to the next part. We finished... The next page is something, well, it's another repeat page, but there's different quotes on it, and we didn't do the whole page. So The first paragraph ended in a huge environment of bull sessioning is pure utopia after being on committees. Next paragraph. Another major breakdown resulting from electric speed-up or new rim spin around any society is that experience becomes useless in the conduct of big business today. Note that. Experience becomes useless in the conduct of big business today. You see many TV shows about the obsolescence of the bureaucrat in an organization chart, and then what are they going to do? And often the star of the TV show is some guy, you know, chafing at the bit to get out of his specialist role because his experience has become useless. He's got to get to another level of espionage. So this says, McLuhan continues, the student activists of right or left, capital R, capital L, are 19th century minds unaware of 20th century events. When they graduate to the world of business and affairs, they will discover that classrooms and courses long preceded them. In other words, they're going to get more classrooms and more courses in the business world. Then he says, oh, and two quotes on either side of this discussion of another major breakdown resulting from electric speed-up or new rim spin around any society is that experience becomes useless in the conduct of big business today. And then the student activists of right or left are 19th century minds unaware of 20th century events. When they graduate to the world of business and affairs, they will discover that classrooms and courses long preceded them. On the left of that, it says, print snapshotted thought processes and created a passion for equivocation. Equivocation would be doubt. Now, that's interesting. So that's what he means by doubt, means seeing double. You started to get schizoid with the printing press. Society and the mind became split. Print snapshotted thought processes and created a passion for equivocation. You know, well, this is the way it is, but on the other hand, this could happen. And don't forget Bob and Ion, they're another factor. So we've got at least four factors here in trying to decide. We're just going to have to do more research. I don't think we can make a conclusion. That's what McLuhan's making fun of. Then on the right side of that paragraph, it says, it is the same in the sciences and in engineering. The students are obsolete. They're trained in 19th century methods. They're not trained to see that Finnegan's Wake is a physics proclamation, not just a novel. It was James Joyce said he was the greatest engineer who ever lived. So it is the same in the sciences and in engineering. They're obsolete upon graduation. Then the next paragraph, third paragraph, one of the major breakdowns in contemporary politics is that the emperor has to become a clown. Publicity is so much a part of the governing processes that the governor is inevitably a showman who has to, quote, put on his public, unquote. Now, this is a more amazing pattern, predicting Reagan. In George Bernard Shaw's, quote, or title, Good King Charles's Golden Days, Newton appeared as an emperor to Charles II. Charles II appeared as a clown until the moment when he put on his royal mask or role. And then to the right of that, it says, the atomic bomb as overkill was a breakdown of war and diplomacy alike, revealing many hidden processes in the body politic. The atomic bomb as overkill was a breakdown of war and diplomacy alike, revealing many hidden processes in the body politic. So look at this.
Those types of patterns is like, you have to go like, what?
Yeah.
The atomic bomb, what?
Yeah, yeah. As overkill.
Now, translate that, please.
The atomic bomb as overkill was a breakdown of war and diplomacy alike. What that meant was you couldn't have major wars anymore after 1945. And so since it was the American victory, they were able to go around to all the different countries and potential terrorist crucibles and say, if you do anything to New York City or to any city, we will nuke your whole country. Now, there was no more polite, you know, negotiating back and forth. The world government just came in and said, don't fuck with this stuff. You can do your little backyard wars over silly issues and keep the weapons and drugs trade going, but don't attempt any big war over acquiring some empire, some territorial empire or superpower status, because when you make your first move, we're going to counter with something you wished you didn't experience. So they went around telling people, "We'll kill you." That was not diplomatic. That was, what are you going to call it, fascism, emergency measures, FEMA cramp. But as the atomic bomb obsolescence would reveal, my phone's running out, the atomic bomb as overkill was a breakdown of war and diplomacy alike, revealing many hidden processes in the body politic, revealed the weakness of the old diplomatic position. Okay, Carol, I'll just take that. She's pulling it out, putting it in. Thank you very much. Okay. And then you would turn that one off. Okay. Can you hear me, Roxana?
Yes.
Okay. So, revealing many hidden processes in the body politic. So what happened is that war, espionage, all those issues that were in World War One and Two were obsolete. So he had nothing but, as McLuhan says in Take Today, the old flatfoot police environment, the spy versus spy environment. They became the fodder of entertainment. They became a rearview mirror, and people, it was an update of Bonanza. And so they studied many movies made in the 50s and 60s about this and that process in previous wars, all the while not telling you that a bigger change happened where war was technically impossible, and so was diplomacy under this new threat of the atomic bomb environment. So most of art and novels and intellectuality, musical concepts are celebrating new insights caused by the rearview mirror. See, revealing many hidden processes in the body politic. So a lot of stuff that was hidden in the first half of the 20th century became the content of movies like James Bond. But there was a major obsolescence to those kind of patterns, and that's why they worked. When it's obsolete, you get more and more. So more and more ideas and pattern recognition happened in the pop culture in the post-Elvis world. So many old processes were revealed. What wasn't revealed was the cause of all these processes being revealed. That was revealed by McLuhan. So if you figure out how to...
And another thing is many people ask, why are you not so famous? Or what?
Yes.
You're not on main media. And it's because you're not obsolete, and being famous is only being obsolete. It's not something you really want.
That's right. I mean, that's the proof I'm one of the greatest artists alive today, is that I managed to live a long time without paying any homage to the old situations. I mean, that's the fascism, or the mild police state of the information society. You have to have a PhD before you get on Charlie Rose. You know, you have to have some kind of university-sanctioned degree. And remember, McLuhan said the university became the new city. The city environment itself.
Yes, and the title only proves that you can sit for a long time.
Yeah.
Quiet.
Yes.
In a classroom. Doesn't mean that you're more intelligent or that you really know.
Right.
It's only, you can take all this organized ignorance in a passive way for hours and hours while you pay for that. So that's like, oh, okay, he has been obedient. Let's see what he has to say.
He can sit here.
Dangerous.
Right. And there was a line McLuhan made up. You never stop paying for a cheap education.
Right.
So you have nowadays, so you have many of these people by the 70s and 80s who had their degrees and PhDs end up being cab drivers. The obsolescence of the university appeared pretty quickly after the global theater of the 60s. And that's 40 years ago. Where are those people today? Now the kids, because they went to high school and then went to a little university, have huge debts. That's the other stupidity. You know, you've sat for a long time, but now you've acquired a huge debt. So you're potentially allowed to get a job if you've shown that you can sit for a long time and acquire a huge debt. That's the new part. All right, so it's...
that's the progress.
Yeah, that's progress. Okay, so another quote. So that's one page where on the left side it said, print snapshot of thought processes and created a passion for equivocation. And then it, and then the whole thing of the educational institutions being obsolete, it is the same in the sciences and in engineering, says McLuhan on the right side. And then the atomic bomb as overkill was a breakdown of war and diplomacy alike, revealing many hidden processes in the body politic. That's why no war, Korea maybe, because that's the early 50s, but by the time you get Vietnam, you're not going to be able to have the war end on a practical note. It ends up just humiliating everybody because war's purpose is no longer possible. The idea is not to take over territory, but to be in a position of leverage in the information circuitry. So let's go to the same page. Middle column's the same, but he has different quotes on the second page that repeats it. So where it said, talking about the student activists, I'll read this again. Another major breakdown resulting from electric speed-up or new rim spin around any society is that experience becomes useless. That's a really important point about understanding how experience in chemical body living and in chemical body training education is obsolete in a speeded-up information society. So experience becomes useless in the conduct of big business today. And this is being said 50 years ago. Was it 50 years ago? And so when these activists of the right or left, with their 19th century minds, and that includes Abby Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, all the radicals, probably the only guy, the Beatles, John Lennon, Yoko Ono, they all had 19th century minds. Not that McLuhan had a, not that Zappa had the expertise of McLuhan, but he was less 19th century than anybody else around of his generation. He kind of figured things out. Not as sophisticated as McLuhan, but he gives Zappa credit on his ability to figure out and show it in his music. The obsolete, I mean, to go as we heard today, this fantastic guitar solo, then go into a doo-wop song. Schoenberg wouldn't dare do that. Or Stockhausen, or Webern, or John Adams. Okay, in the left it says, knowledge needs compel businesses to become universities. So people went to university and sat in a class so that they could get a job in a business, a corporation, where they continue going to classes and sitting. Knowledge needs compel businesses to become universities. On the right side of this middle paragraph, it says, the resulting cult of paradox. Could you just, let's see, we have to wait till Carolyn finishes her banging around. Can you hear the banging, Roxy?
Very faintly, not really.
Okay, so maybe it's not a big deal. It sounds very loud to me. The resulting cult of paradox was a means of turning the learned world into entertainment and probe. For example, the big corporation becomes a mini-state, colon, the mini-state is free to make dynastic alliances, dash, hence the conglomerate. Conglomerate in quotes. Now that's the alliance of mafia, CIA, and business corporations. That's the alliance of the warfare, welfare, drug dealing, regular drugs and illegal drugs environment, where entertainment becomes part of the military complex. And the ultimate level of wisdom that they can come up with is paradox. And they'll show that in TV shows all the time. In the good, what's it called, the Good Wife, Suits, all these sort of, in quotes, intelligent TV shows that take the corporate dialogue and corporate complex knowledge of the trade of lawyers and slash it back at the people. And most people can't follow it all. But they always end up, the TV shows end up showing a huge paradox that's undermining everything. But see, they only get that far. They can't go beyond showing the paradox. So that's why McLuhan's calling it the cult of paradox, the resulting cult of paradox. And isn't this awesome, these ideas? As you got this 20 years ago?
Yes.
Jeez, you would have been teaching at universities now. So
what he said about, for example, the politicians becoming clowns.
Yes.
I mean, who would say that at that time?
That's right. People felt it, but they didn't want to articulate it, and they themselves were conditioned by literacy, and they wanted to maintain the literate goals. So they just didn't have the detachment to go as far as McLuhan with McLuhan's clarity. One of the major breakdowns in contemporary politics is that the emperor has to become a clown. And he said that Trudeau was the best of that. But Canada was an insignificant country, and you could never be a clown like Trudeau, he said, in the United States. That's a serious country. They're in charge. You know, you don't fuck around. Like, there's footage of Trudeau visiting the Queen Elizabeth, and he slides down the banister in Buckingham Palace or someplace, and she's walking ahead of him, doesn't see it, and then he does a pirouette right in front of the Queen. It's quite shocking. It was quite shocking to royalists and Canadians and people who thought they were part of the British Empire. Canada didn't get free of the British Empire technically until 1982 when Trudeau brought the Constitution home or did something where the Queen signed and agreed, yes, you're an independent country, right when countries were obsolete. So even Trudeau didn't avoid frustration. Trudeau lived in the cult of paradox. So the resulting cult of paradox was a means of turning the learned world into entertainment and probe. That's why all the professors in the universities in the 60s, they were frustrated knowing that their work was boring and they would rather get into the entertainment world in some way, and they were jealous that McLuhan did it. McLuhan jumped to the entertainment world and was able to make pattern recognition and have a role there and probe. The other guys were too timid. They thought, no, I think we must remain loyal to visual space values. And that undermined them, that stopped them, frustrated them. And then as things got worse in the 80s, the academics were able to retrieve the visual space values and call it neoconservatism and run amok for a while, because the whole population was getting even more nostalgic for serious information as it was becoming obsolete. For example, the big corporation becomes a mini-state. Now, this is really important. The decentralization is everybody becoming a mini-state. The mafia becomes a mini-state. The drug cartels, the sports empires, fragmented mini-states. So no longer a unified nation. You have...
Bob.
What?
You are a mini-state.
I'm a mini-state, exactly. I will become a mini-state. Zappa, they used to say, some journalists would travel around with Zappa and said, I got to see his empire, global empire. So it was a mini-state. Understanding the mini-state explains a lot, because the mini-state can become rogue. I mean, that's a big theme in TV shows the last, I don't know, 10 years or something, is these rogue elements in bureaucratic organizations becoming mini-states and hijacking the larger culture. That's the Kennedy assassination. For example, the big corporation becomes a mini-state. The mini-state is free to make dynastic alliances, hence the conglomerate in quotes, because conglomerate implies a centralized, big organization chart. But that is a misnomer, a rearview mirror image. The conglomerate is made up of little associated mini-states, little Rumpelstiltskins. So... Right, so let's see. So we did that. That covers that page and the two pages of different columns on either side. Now we're going into the next page. How many pages is this? We may not finish this tonight. This is a long thing, but it's good. Let's just check in for a minute. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
What do you say about what you're hearing?
Yes. What blew me away was when you started off with that the new flood of print is organized ignorance.
Yes.
Because I had a thought this week from reading the Verbi Vocal Visual, as far as all the little puns and jokes, is that McLuhan was like making a pun at the fall of man with the print.
Yes.
That print was the fall of man, and he couldn't come right out and just say it. So he really, you know, just really created a lot of, in a joking way, or just really turned so many different thought patterns into one pattern just to get people to just think, or maybe just see it, maybe. But it was really radical what he did. Really radical. I mean, this is awesome. I mean, I fell out when I heard a camel is a horse designed by a committee.
That's great.
In German, there is an expression they call Fachidioten.
Yeah.
People who knows a lot, but only about one field.
Right.
Like
specialists.
The universities make you specialize in one field, and that's supposed what you're supposed to do, because they think it's not serious if you know about many things. If you have to be a specialist.
Right, that's an update of the village idiot. You're saying a factual idiot. Fact idiotum?
Yes, idiot that knows a lot, but only about one field.
And that's what a nerd is.
And yes, and the thing with the organized ignorance is, like, they're doing that in universities. They're creating these fachidioten that cannot make the patterns you can make, because they cannot see from any other angles. And they also repress themselves because they think they have no authority to talk about something else that is not their fach, their of stupidity, of their speciality.
They're lost in visual space authority. They want to have the authority of knowledge in the old-fashioned way.
Yes, yeah, so...
So, yeah,
that's why maybe many won't take McLuhan very seriously, because he's, like, going all over the place, all periods, all... But this is the orgy of everything in the now.
Yes. Yep.
That Ion make us aware that we are everywhere.
In a non-now. In a non-now.
The people who is not is...
Is where we all are.
Everywhere.
Yes, we're all children of Bob now, and Bob's the only one who knows that, so Bob's in charge, right?
Only Bob knows how to get out of the desert.
Yeah, that's right. Bob knows where the oasis
he
is.
He has the manna.
That's right. I got the manna. Good metaphor. Remember, McLuhan had himself photographed in as many university departments as possible.
He did that?
He did that. He would go around and, okay,
no,
you know.
He was making fun of this.
That's right.
Of the academy.
Yeah.
I heard him in Monday Night Seminar say, it's amazing how many stupid people are in universities. And he was commenting on the image of universities as with these experts and all that, and these intelligent people. And he said, you find really stupid people. He would say, he writes, he celebrates the fast ear-to-ear learning style of the illiterate or post-literate or pre-literate. The oral culture.
Yes, because, I mean, it's like you pay, you sit there so many hours, and then you just repeat from quoting books and write it down, but you're not really making anything new. You're just quoting.
It's a passive consumer.
And repeating.
A passive consumer. Now, that's what I liked about my life, is that I didn't have to sit anywhere for very long. That kept me healthy. No wonder I look young. If you didn't have to sit every day.
That's why you are the only one who could do this, because you don't have these limitations about your...
Yeah, you never experienced the limitation.
And then...
I never knew nothing.
Also,
I just showed up and participated. I showed up in not only every department of university, every intelligence agency I showed up.
You don't have to care about the reputation everybody's scared of losing. Like the woman that you were quoting on her essay about the heart and the love. I don't remember.
Oh, man, she got so mad.
Yes, because, I mean, it's not serious, or she's going to lose her reputation, or I don't know what she worries about.
Right, it's sad. But McLuhan had himself... pictured in every university. Then he'd leave the university and walk around the city and have himself show up in every medium. I met an artist in 1977 outside of the Coach House. He's Dennis somebody. He kind of was a well-known local painter. And he had just been visiting McLuhan, and I had been there. So we were talking outside. And he told me he was aware of McLuhan since the 50s. And one day he did a performance piece in a judge's court. Some artist, Michael Snow or somebody, hired a courtroom. And so he had a role in it. So he's part of this avant-garde artistic theater activity in, you know, way back in the late 50s, early 60s or something. And he says he was there dressed in his costume, ready to do his role, and McLuhan walked in, who he didn't know of. He didn't know who this guy was. McLuhan walked in with judge's robes on.
Bob appeared.
Yeah. Bob appeared in judge's robes, and he went and sat in the judge's table, chair, throne, and he did his part in this performance piece. I don't know how it was recorded or what happened, but he did it. Now, here's what Dennis Burton, that was his name, Dennis Burton said, what was shocking is McLuhan got up when it was over. He got up, took off his robes, and walked out and didn't say anything to anybody. He just left.
I was commenting with you this, that in Annie Hall, Andy, no, what's his name, Woody Allen,
yeah,
is discussing with these people, this person who thinks he knows everything.
Yeah.
He has done a seminar on McLuhan on TV and I don't know what. But
a Columbia University professor. He's a Columbia University professor.
And he just goes and behind like an ad or something, it's McLuhan. And
yeah.
He says, okay, let's ask him. And he says, don't you wish life was
like
this? And I was thinking, Bob, life is like that. You can go to the Evergreen Lion and say, okay, let's ask Joyce or let's ask McLuhan.
I have him right here. This is what you're right. Woody Allen didn't realize that you could do it. You could have access to anything, and you could do it. You didn't have to.
Yes, and when I was watching that, I said, wow, that's what he does with the Evergreens. Like, let's ask
Joyce. Hey, Wyndham, we hear you had a problem with James and Ezra Pound. What was the issue? And then he'd tell us. Oh, very nice. Thank you. Now, let's talk to Galileo.
Like,
what was your problem with the Pope?
Discuss,
the Pope didn't like
Galileo.
We could talk to your great-grandfather, Roxy, about why he wrote the History of Mexico. You know what I mean? We have him right here.
Yes.
So where do I sound like a nut on the radio there with Mike Dyer? Well, Mike, I was talking to McLuhan last night, and Zappa came in.
Yes.
And
do we have this idea that we have this destiny mission that we have to fulfill?
Yeah.
Serving humanity or something like that.
Say it again. This vision of what?
Serving humanity, like we have this vision. Of,
yeah. And you're saying that's a limitation?
No, but he thought he was serving his...
Who, McLuhan?
And, no, my great-grandfather.
Oh, your great... Well, that was back when nationalism was the newest novelty. That was avant-garde to create a country, you know, to create a republic. That's what he was engaging in. And it was, books were important. They were the hidden ground. He believed in the history he was writing. He was a hacker. He had the latest technology.
Roxana, your grandfather did that?
Great grandfather, maybe.
Yes.
Great
grandfather.
Wow.
Yes, after the independence in Mexico, because the Spanish that were born in Mexico were considered less than the Spanish. So they could not be in the most important
position.
Government positions. And after the independence of Mexico, the white population that was born in Mexico, they decided they needed to rewrite history so that they could have...
authority.
Yes, authority and some ideals and... a sense of where they're going and...
Yeah, visual space, goals, and directives.
Yeah, for example, the symbol of their ideas was the Pegaso. The
what? Sargasso Sea? Oh, Pegasus. Yes, Pegasus.
Yeah.
Pegasus.
Yeah.
The horse with wings.
Yes, yeah, so, which is like... they were really into... owning big lands, and they were like cowboys. So
yeah, that's visual space, though.
With wings as their ideal. And he had this homework to rewrite history, and he did.
And Bert, she just found out recently that they're republishing his books. Somebody,
oh,
some
really?
Press in South Africa. someplace.
Wow.
And is he the same age as the nuns who created the convent? Is he the same generation?
No, he was his father.
Well, who was his father?
He was the father of the nuns.
Oh, okay. And was he the guy that took the crown over to Maximilian or the Austrian that's in the painting?
Yeah, he
was he first generation there? Was he the first?
No.
He was second generation, maybe, from Basque. His parents came from the Basques. Okay, so we better get back and do some more of this. Not for you, Roxy. Yeah. You hijacked this fucking thing with your nerdy specialist history.
I don't know how we landed there. But,
we're talking about writing.
I was actually praising you.
Yes, you were praising me, but I switched it to praising your grandfather.
You will not discuss with these fachidioten about what do they know about this and that. You will go directly to Joyce or to
one day,
Louis or
where I talked to the Evergreens in Toronto, down at the center of the town, center of the city, at Bloor and Yonge, those two major city streets. The town was there, and I would just walk a half a mile, and I would go into McLuhan's Cocho's. One time, in 1999, I just talked to McLuhan, a whole bunch of stuff, and then I was given the cassette tapes, and I walked over to the Cocho's, and it was late afternoon, and there were these students in there studying under de Kirchhoff, who was running the Cocho's, and I walked in the side door, and they looked at me, and they were shocked that this like person appears like an angel, and I said, "See these cassettes?" And they go, "Yeah." I just talked to Marsh McLuhan, the guy you're trying to study right here. He's right in my cassettes. And they just looked stunned, and I walked out.
You're acting like the village idiot. Like,
yeah. I talked to him, and I recorded it. And I waited for some kind of interested response, like, "Oh, I'd like to hear that." They didn't say a word. They were frightened, probably. I wasn't trying to look aggressive, but it was probably just so nuts to their visually lifestyle, you know, that they suffered accordingly. Damn, this phone's going out. I gotta.
Yes, but because of you having access to real information that most people don't have access to, you could see that, for example, talking to these entities through channels is not something weird or...
Right. No, if they're good channels, you had to have a good channel, you know.
Yes, because the people in the elite knows about this and knows about worlds and knows...
And I came from the elite.
Many
so
things that, from the little man point of view, cannot be accepted.
Right. And I came from the elite, and I knew what they had done. Let me just switch the phone here. Mine in use. Okay, is it that? Okay, you're there. Turn that off. Got all these phones around the home. So, it's when I think back about... my routine. I mean, I would be at a seminar at the Cocho's or something involved, and then I would leave and say, "I'm going to go talk to Marcel Duchamp." And I just said that, and a huge thunderclap happened. We don't usually get thunder here. Sorry, Marcel. Yeah, I know you're embarrassed that I fucking engaged you, Mr. Duchamp. I know it ruins your reputation. Bob, he talked to Bob. He let Bob in. But it was pretty neat. And then I go play ball hockey. Look at that. Talk to McLuhan, do the best analysis of everything, then go on the radio and mouth off, and then go play ball hockey. Then go home and hear about the latest healing that Carolyn did. You know, so it was quite extraordinary.
Another thing.
Go ahead.
I was comparing you before Ion, and I saw how different you sound and
yes.
to now, because before you had no confirmation, and you told me for you the confirmation was Carolyn.
Yes.
But, I mean, that
her
is
successes.
That you could see. But the other people could not see that. They just listened, for example, to you on CKLN.
Yeah.
And they may think, this guy is really a megalomaniac. He's just crazy. And
well, what
he
fucking crazy?
And that. He claims he's Bob Dog. He claims he met Hitler. He claims.
He claims he caused, he killed Kennedy. He claims he caused AIDS. Wow. It was awesome. It was an act of...
You claim you are the Android meme, but you are here to save us.
But I had crumbs of proof. When Steve's mother called me the Antichrist in 1968, I said, oh, no, like, I didn't appear to be the Antichrist yet, but she noticed something. I said, oh, good, there it is, I'm on the right track. I get these signs, but one every 5 years I get a sign. Like, and then...
Well, but I found it very interesting that you say that for you, before I am, before you had this proof, before you had the RNA drops and
All
the information from Ion, your confirmation was Carolyn.
Because she was doing such amazing stuff in her own practice, and not know, and the people didn't know other than the patients. I was just saying that the other day to her. I said, you have no problem being told that you're in the Sistine Chapel because you knew you were doing amazing stuff all those years. And other people didn't know it, unless they were close friends. And I said, it was no big deal when you were told that. You already knew that people didn't understand what you were doing. And so, yes, that was building up. But I told Roxanne a few days before that seeing what she was doing and then getting Mir, the fact that I was associated with it, I knew I was in the ground floor on something pretty amazing. You know what I mean? Guilt by success by association. So, yeah, that really was a factor, was watching what Carolyn was doing.
Yes,
that mirror is phenomenal. That mirror is phenomenal.
What'd you say, Roxy? Just a minute, Bert. What'd you say, Roxy?
You had to keep up.
Yeah, I had to keep up with the genius.
Amazing.
Yeah, she'd arrived in Akasha in 1970. According to Cosmic Awareness, you know, the new being, the new altered Tridosia, which was air, fire, and water, and it got water got dropped and turned into Akasha. But Bert, what were you saying? The mirror, yes, you looked into that a little bit?
Yeah, the mirror's phenomenal, yeah. I read some of what you did, and that's phenomenal, phenomenal. And it didn't even kick off, but now she's standing on top with...
Well, I understand that Carolyn spent, you know, 30, 40 years trying to find some people to work with. And in the end, she had to realize, nobody's on your level, Karen. You're going to have to do it yourself. And then that's when she started to realize the RNA drops and what we're doing is what only she can do. You know, and then she doesn't have to work with anybody anymore.
Yes, and I found it also very remarkable of both of you that you were not recognized by the system, and even her license was taken.
Yeah, they took her license away. But that's the political archetype.
But for me, that's really a good sign.
Yes, that's what
for
I mean. It's the political archetype.
That's because you're not part of that
system.
Organized ignorance.
That's right, learned ignorance.
That is already obsolete.
Yeah, like
for
look at Big E.
That's like a good sign that things are...
Yeah, we're on the... Yeah, it was a good sign when she lost her license. I mean, they investigated her in 1984. She'd been in practice for like 5 years, and they took her up to the authorities in the Medical Union Guild of Ontario, Canada, and said, you're not earning enough money. You're spending an hour with each patient? Come on! Should be like 7 minutes or something. And she was... It was like you moved in, you brought you lowered the real estate values in your street by turning your house into a ghetto. You're ruining the neighbors' value of resale of their homes. Carolyn was ruining the image of medicine by not making that much money and spending a lot of time with the patients. And they noticed it through their computers. But, like, nobody could stop her. They didn't discipline her. I don't know what they did. They just told her, hey.
Yes, because I think there is this knowing
Yeah.
That one thing is what we think is the what we have to achieve in the little man world, like money and fame.
Yeah.
But there is another knowing that is most profound, that we knew we have to ascend and gain the real power and the completion and the ascension. It's not that the other things are just pate, like Ion says.
Yeah, you know, McLuhan said his work was for people who had a superiority complex. Now, that was accurate in a satirical statement. Carol and I had huge superiority complexes, but nobody knew it because we were just regular nice people. You know what I mean? Friendly, available. Available for whatever orgies were, scenes were going to happen. We're available. Yes, we'll participate. But the superiority complex was incredible. But it was not a secular superiority complex. It was like, we're on some fucking mission here. We're actually probably going to save this fucking planet. Bertie Ketchies tells me in 1971 of a spiritual gift to the masses. What have you ever told that, Bert? Could you have handled it?
No, the thing that I really like is when you said, I was here before and I will be before after.
Yeah.
I was here before the Logos, I'll be here long after the universe has ended. What the fuck was I talking about?
That's a superiority complex.
Yeah. Show me your best shot. Who's your greatest god? And they're puny compared to me, basically what I was saying. But the... And also, you know, reading this McLuhan stuff, it's so good. You know what I mean? It's very original and interesting the way he makes patterns and connects things that you wouldn't expect. But that was another thing. I'd read this 50 years ago.
The thing I like here is that we can go into Ionic ideas and patterns and connections we can make with what we know from Ion and you and Caroline, and that cannot be done anywhere else. I mean,
right.
Here in Berlin, there is this McLuhan Salon, and they have discussions and all, but their reading is so superficial. I mean, they're still thinking that we're in the global village.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty silly.
They just repeat their slogans, like, McLuhan.
There's a McLuhan, there's a McLuhan Salon in Berlin.
Wow!
What? Yeah.
Did you say that there's...
At the Canadian embassy, they have a...
A McLuhan Salon.
At the Canadian Embassy, they have a library, only McLuhan, only videos. And
really?
So you know what happened, Bert?
Yeah.
I visited them there when I was there that week with Roxy. And then she was the main woman there, was interested in, and I said I'd get in touch with her. And I didn't get, I lost her card, so it took a long time to get reconnected. But meantime, she met Roxy. And at one point, she starts saying, who's this Bob guy? You know, she starts spying on me, trying to figure out if I was acceptable or not to her world bureaucracy.
Mm.
We hope she doesn't listen to this. We're talking about right on the air.
Well, we did the video of one of their talks.
Right.
I haven't done the editing with your answers, but I suppose they have seen other videos of you.
Yeah.
That are posted there, so...
Well, if they see the later videos, the recent one... Well, Bob, so you're the second coming, eh, Bob? Yes, we're the second coming, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I mean, I'm still sounding nutty.
No, but I think people can think you're just like a performer.
Yes, it's a clown. I'm imitating a megalomaniac. It's like the best review I would get. This guy is a genius. He shows you what these cult leaders and megalomaniacs are like. He satirizes them. No, it's not that case. So I stand by what I say.
Who has really studied McLuhan can see that you really are the most amazing scholar
in
of
McLuhan.
His work.
You can hear. Maybe I'll play at the end of my speech at the McLuhan Conference in 1998. Because each page that I would sort of look at and then throw on the floor, the MC says, so there's Bob. I guess he's a performance artist. And you hear me yell out, no, I'm not a performance artist. I'm serious. And he didn't know what to say to that. But, no, it's fun.
Well, you are, but not only that.
Not only that. I'm only being a satirist because you won't listen to me. If you fucking start listening to me, then we can get serious. We get some things done around here.
You're an Egyptian artist. Like, you're reprogramming the whole planet.
Yeah, have you heard? Ion's been saying that more and more the last few weeks. Well, Bob caused that. Bob did this. Bob did that. I set up this whole thing of giving Moses the fucking clay tablets to start off Visual Space. I started Visual Space so that we knew we had to organize ignorance for discovery and then flip it in the final days.
Yes, you thought, okay, how do we get out of this? Okay, we have to invent some media.
The medium is the message,
then,
boys.
Someday we'll get the solution to the situation they get into with these medias.
Right. Now, if you listen to that panel with Einstein and Tesla and Edison and Rockefeller and Pound and McLuhan and Galileo and those people, the physics panel, I asked this question. Did we take 2,000 years to get here because of astrology, astrological limitations controlling, or other factors? Why do we go around in circles and take so long to get here to the 20th century? And everybody say, there's a lot of smirking and smiling here. Didn't say smirk, but I said there's a lot of smiles. Everybody knew these were scientists, and they're not going to support astrology, but that was a major question. What is controlling humanity that it took so long to get through these evolutions? And I think what their answer was, the humans go around in circles. They'll get into a rut, and they can go for 300 years doing the same thing.
But that was what I was trying to ask Ian, because McLuhan said medias affect the physicality of men.
Yeah. The image of physicality. It affects the images the group shares of what they're made up of.
But I think, for example, the electronic environment really affected the Goth. I mean, dissolved the Goth. And
yeah.
I think it really affects our physicality, not only in the image, but really in the physical.
It did. It affected physicality, and physicality is made up of thought and imagery.
And the brain, for example.
Yeah, and the cells. Now, my greatest, as a McLuhanite, Thompson started to get there, but I blatantly said 30 years ago that the electric environment permeates the astral plane, and it's altering the astral plane. Now, that's advanced McLuhanism. Don't know if McLuhan agreed with that, but that was a way of saying this is the astral plane, or non-physical, or ion, is going to be affected by this. And Ion said they came forth because the chip body allowed them to come forth. He confirmed what I had said. And you can say no one else.
That's what I was saying. The process to activate chromosome 14 was the whole media.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
The all media served to activate the chromosome 14.
Well, as you refine your question, ask it again of Ion. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's why you got into media and ecology. Like,
yes. It was the most advanced academic pattern recognition. It was new knowledge, just like Freud was new knowledge, Jung was new knowledge, maybe Crick and Watson, the DNA was new knowledge. McLuhan was new knowledge, the latest new knowledge, and pointing to a completion factor.
And Bob, you're the new scientist, because you just described earlier that you would go into the coach house, listen to a lecture, and then you would go and ask the Evergreens questions, and then go play hockey.
Yeah, that was the new scientist.
That's the new scientist.
I knew the mind was a victim. I knew I didn't have to have a mind, but I could explore all obsolete mind systems.
Yeah, you've been working outside of the literate mind thing forever. So that's why your take and perspective and everything is very unique, because you didn't get to sit down and get a diploma like
right.
A lot of people.
I didn't even public education.
That would be a sign that he's only domesticated, and he's not.
No.
He's really ascended.
But reading is fun, and I've slowly became literate through the decades by reading all the top writers, you know? I'm quite literate now.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of novels and things. And so I'm balanced. I've got literacy and post and pre-literacy.
Love and shit.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
like people talk now. I read a lot of stuff and shit.
Yes, yeah, I read a lot of stuff and shit. That's right. Rick Rofe used to say, yeah, I read book. He'd say, I read a book once. He was a poet. But we only got 15 minutes. So let's finish. Let's do some more. We're not going to finish it, but great to celebrate me once more on August 28th, but we must get back to what we're celebrating. I was just going to say, it's a pleasure back then reading this stuff. This was wealth. This was the best kind of wealth, to have access to stuff and read it and think about it. You know what I mean? Stuff
yes.
is it's like a valuable painting.
You told us that it was very expensive to get them.
Yes, most people weren't able. It was $50. If they were executives, they'd use it as a tax write-off, you know. And so people never saw it. They couldn't afford $50 for a newsletter that ended up just being stuff repeating itself, sort of, until we get to this one. This is giving some good new stuff, good new data. So he continues, in Kuwait, with a population of less than 500,000 people, half a million people, in 8,000 square miles of territory, everybody is so rich that he spends all of his time keeping account of his wealth. The entire population has become a civil service. No immigration is permitted in this teetotal society. And he has on the left, small paragraph, one breakdown which looms at present is the possibility of civil servants outnumbering civilians. You get that? One breakdown which looms at present is the possibility of civil servants outnumbering civilians. I mean, everybody was becoming a bureaucrat. Bureaucracy was obsolete, so became more and more bureaucracy. And that led into everybody sitting at a computer information job, you know, filing. On the other side, it says, this happened in the ancient world capitalized. This is the moment when the art of being ruled, quoting Wyndham Lewis, when the art of being ruled is superseded by the art of ruling, the governed become the governor. Now, he's talking about an electric age. The audience gets in the act, and polling and profiling the discarnate population, mass man, is what's ruling. So this happened in the ancient world. This is the moment when the art of being ruled is superseded by the art of ruling. The governed become the governor. So and on Kuwait, they somehow spread the wealth around, and so the entire population has become a civil service. And everybody spends their time keeping account of their wealth, like an accountant. So that's pretty interesting about Kuwait. And then next paragraph, a current breakdown that leads to many breakthroughs. See, like, you know, everybody's worrying about a breakdown. The Illuminati aren't here anymore. They fucked up. They off themselves. They're going to kill us. Because there's no, there's lots of breakthroughs here. Lots of breakthroughs because the Illuminati fucked up.
That's their homework. They have to fucked up everything so that Bob can come in.
Yeah, Bob, he gives Bob, like, you screamed for homework when you were 10 years old. Bob screamed for breakdown. Please, send breakdowns over here. We'll clean up the mess. No problem. And we'll do it just
economic
by...
Economic crisis, yay!
Yeah. Like Salvador Dali said, he loved news of earthquakes and big things like that, disasters, but... what I do is I solve the problem just by giving out the information pattern. A current breakdown that leads to many breakthroughs is to be found in the unstructured or gradeless school or college. As soon as the students are relieved of all courses, classes, and tests, and are left to find their own way and goals, they discover that all the knowledge in the world has been classified. What had appeared as superimposed patterns of teaching and administration, they discover, are pale reflexes of the stored knowledge resources of the world. For 2,500 years, we have been classifying data. It is this massive classified fact upon which rest the petty superstructures of educational and governmental bureaucracies. The vast new service environments of the contemporary world only become visible like the car when they break down. Consciousness itself is a process of the perpetual manufacturing of concepts to control the inrushing flood of perceptions. We scrap these concepts moment by moment in order to cope with the ever-rising flood. Now, the quote beside that on the right is, electricity is syncopation applied to all work and knowledge. You know, syncopation, drumming.
Mm-hmm.
Electricity is syncopation applied to all work and knowledge. On the left side it says, jazz and syncopation reveal the nature of civilization as a world of continuity by recreating the syncopated tribal world of a closed society. So jazz showed what they exposed the literate open world of bureaucracy by recreating the syncopated tribal world of a closed society. Acoustic space is a closed society. So then, let's reread this point again. A common breakthrough that leads to many breakthroughs is to be found in the unstructured or gradeless school or college. As soon as the students are relieved of all courses, classes, and tests, and are left to find their own way and goals, they discover that all the knowledge in the world has been classified. What it appeared as superimposed patterns of teaching and administration, they discover are pale reflexes of the stored knowledge resources of the world. Pale reflexes of the stored knowledge resources of the world. For 2,500 years, we have been classifying data. It is this massive classified fact upon which rest the petty superstructures of educational and governmental bureaucracies. The vast new service environments of the contemporary world only become visible like the car when they break down. So this is a good definition of consciousness. Consciousness itself is a process of the perpetual manufacturing of concepts to control the inrushing flood of perceptions. We scrap these concepts moment by moment in order to cope with the ever-rising flood. The killing of the mind. Okay, the next page. The scrapped concepts, in turn, become a huge midden heap of new perceptual data. Mental breakdown is the means of revealing the mental processes. Only a person discharged from a mental institution has any means of proving his sanity. Beside it, it says, privacy is impossible without a public. On the other side, privatization is a cure for bigness, i.e., bigness reveals its opposite. Then the next paragraph. The seeming breakdown in the current educational process results mainly from the entire environment having become a teaching machine. This breakdown from new rim spin, in turn, reveals the processes of education budgeting for more and more hardware classes and libraries. Meantime, the students reject these services and insist upon immersion in the educational processes as total as their immersion in their information environment. Then beside it, it says, involvement has supplanted idle spectating. This leads to the simple discovery that by diverting the educational budget directly to the students, they could roam the world for total immersion in multiple languages and cultures. This, in turn, would cost a fraction of the current education budget by eliminating hardware and teachers. And as beside that, the herb orbs, I think that's from Finning's Wake, with no pointing out it's from Finning's Wake.
Yeah.
The herb or city orbs, the planet as a single metropolis, the moon as sub-herb, the moon as suburb or sub-herb. All right, how are we doing? We got at least got 7 minutes. The poet, W.B. Yeats, when he felt he had run out of poetic inspiration and exhausted all of his themes, said, quote, now that my ladder's gone, I must lie down where all the ladders start, in the foul rag and bone shop of my heart, unquote. And it says, all poetic and artistic achievement is the result of breakdown and frustration. It is the breakdown of perception that inspires the artist to create new images and new models for perception. Stephen Dedalus, at the end of Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, says, quote, I go to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience and to forge in the smithy of my soul the uncreated conscious of my race, unquote. Now, that's a satirical statement. Many people thought that's what Joyce wanted his character to, as a truth. But no, he's making fun of this young megalomaniac trying to go and help people. To the left of that, it says, providing an aesthetic artifact, a book. When by that time, 1910, the book media were obsolete. So Joseph Conrad, on the left it says, Joseph Conrad, he wrote Heart of Darkness. Joseph Conrad summed up his life's work, quote, it is above all that you may see, and see, S-E-E, is italicized. He's trying to make you see. So there's, if that's not a comprehensive see, then that's just visual space. But I think he was trying to be a comprehensive multi-century synesthesia by the word see. Zen says, Hen Selye, in his book From Dream to Discovery, explains how breakthroughs occur just on the borderlines between waking and sleeping. Traditionally, the seer, the maker of breakthroughs and insights, is a blind man. To the left of that, it says, deprivation heightens perception. And then to the right, is there a life before death? Ask the somnambulist. Is there a life before death? Ask the sleepwalkers. So then, the next paragraph. The whole of, and this is a book by Daniel Boorstin, who wrote a famous book called The Image, or What Happened to the American Dream. That was the altering of the American image of itself by television in the 50s. So he, it says, McLuhan writes about Daniel J. Boorstin, the author. The whole of The Image, or What Happened to the American Dream, by Daniel J. Boorstin, is devoted to the theme of breakdown. For the alert reader, the book is also a vast inventory of breakthroughs. It opens with a survey of the distortion of news values by improved news-gathering agencies and technologies. The resulting news, news in quotes, Boorstin labels as pseudo-events. Pseudo-events in quotes. Opposite that, there's a quote, the last part, bit I read you. It says, Robert Louis Stevenson, what was that one? Robinson Crusoe. So the author of Robinson Crusoe. Robert Louis Stevenson once said, quote, I could make an epic out of a newspaper if I knew or know what to leave out, unquote. He had just made a breakthrough without knowing it, because Joyce figured out how to make an epic out of a newspaper by leaving out the dateline. You just redo the newspaper without the dateline. So Robert Louis Stevenson said, I could make an epic out of a newspaper if I knew what to leave out. He didn't know. And then McLuhan says, Stevenson had just made a breakthrough without knowing it. So then, well, that's that page. And then that's... Oh, we got more quotes. So I guess we're going to have to finish with this. This paragraph about artistic achievement. All poetic and artistic achievement is a result of breakdown and frustration. It is the breakdown of perception that inspires the artist to create new images and new models for perception. Stephen Dedalus, at the end of The Portrait of the Artist, the young man says, I go to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience. Remember, experience is not real anymore. And to forge in the smithy of my soul the uncreated conscience of my race, unquote. Now, that's at the end of The Portrait of the Artist. He then goes to Paris, fails in Paris as a med student and a beginning artist, and has to come back to Dublin, and his mother dies, and that's a bad scene, and he has no money. And that's what the novel Ulysses is about, after Stephen has gone forth to create the, you know, the uncreated conscience of his race and to forge in the smithy of his soul and encounter the reality of experience. He's an absolute failure at it 2 years later, and then he has to meet Leopold Bloom on June 16th, 1904. That's what the novel is. Okay, opposite to the left of that, it says, an instant of breakdown is Rudyard Kipling's quote, the toad between the harrow knows exactly where each tooth print goes. The butterfly upon the road preaches contentment to that toad. Read that again. The toad between the harrow knows exactly where each tooth print goes. The butterfly upon the road preaches contentment to that toad. Sort of like a variation on the ant and the grasshopper story. Then opposite on the other side, it says, on the other hand, there is the case of the sardonic caterpillar scornfully observing the antics of a butterfly. The caterpillar says, who is, you know, going to become a caterpillar, says, quote, you'll never get me up in one of them darn things.
I'll never ascend. I want to be a little man.
What'd you say? You never said what?
No, the caterpillar wants to stay a little man.
Yes.
Doesn't want to ascend.
Yeah, you won't get me up there flying around preaching contentment to the toad. So he juxtaposes Kipling and the joke. Then he says, I read this part. Hen Selye, in his book From Dream to Discovery, explains how breakthroughs occur just on the borderlines between waking and sleeping. Traditionally, the seer, the maker of breakthroughs and insights, is a blind man. And to the left of that, he just has two words, the artist. Capital T, capital A, period, the artist. So McLuhan realized that the borderline between waking and sleeping had become environments, the movie environment, the radio, and the TV. So there's a new kind of somnambulistic living in the Twilight Zone, forcing everybody to be creative.
Yes, and I think it's very interesting how he, I mean, Joyce, did the whole Odyssey in one day.
Yes.
Going to back to Ithaca.
Yes.
And
because electrically.
Yeah, it's about a frustrated, I would say, artist trying to
get home,
to get out of the to awake.
Yes, Stephen Dedalus, the character, says, "I'm trying to awake from the nightmare of history." But he, anyways, the interplay between Bloom, who's wiser in a way than the kid. So the kid has genius and wants to be an artist, but he's going to have to learn from the normal guy, who's
yes, and to awake, I now understand, is to start living, like
yes.
Lyle says.
Yeah, yeah, because you're sleeping.
Start seeing, start hearing.
And eating, fill in the blanks. So what was the final point there? The artist is had a final thing. Now you got to go.
Artist.
What? The artist. And remember, the artist is a figure. Art is obsolete. When everybody in the population is forced to deal with constant insults to their being in all kinds of walks of life, it's just, you know, too many environments coming at people. People are somnambulistically, like Ian was saying, becoming artists by default. Forced to live in the now, drop their loyalty to the old institutions, and then survive. But most people find you are cut adrift. You don't have any job security or anything, and most people end up becoming some kind of drug addict.
They have to realize they're all whores of Babylon.
Right. Yeah.
In the Andromeda.
Yeah, the whore of themselves as Babylon.